From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Split show for you tonight in a moment, Fate and Free Will. And later tonight, The Power of Healing. Lynn Andrews joins us. Here's what's happening. While it was tense aboard a U.S. Airways jet traveling from Paris to North Carolina, it was diverted to Maine after a French passenger handed a note to a flight attendant mentioning that she had a surgically implanted device, raising security concerns. An examination by doctors aboard the plane found that the passenger, a French citizen, didn't have any scars. The woman was traveling alone without any checked baggage and intended to stay in the U.S. for 10 days. I think this was some kind of a test. The FBI and Homeland Security Department warned airlines last summer that terrorists are considering surgically hiding bombs inside humans to evade airport security. In 2010, it was reported that British officials uncovered intelligence that Al-Qaeda was seeking to surgically implant bombs inside of people. Now, two F-15 fighters scrambled to escort this flight with 179 passengers and 9 crew to Bangor International Airport. But I do think it could have been a test. A new era in space exploration began early Tuesday. As we were on the air, Richard C. Hoagland reporting, SpaceX successfully launched the Falcon 9 rocket at the Kennedy Space Center. The launch, the first by a private company, was the second try this week after a glitch in one motor halted Saturday's launch 1 second before that liftoff. As the rocket headed for the International Space Station with SpaceX's hopes to begin supplying the orbiting laboratory, the NASA administrator, Charles Bolden, said the launch was the first step in bringing space jobs back to the United States. Space historian Robert Zimmerman with us. Bob, why isn't NASA doing this? I don't understand why they're passing this on to private companies now.
George, NASA has tried to do this now for about 4 decades to replace the shuttle and get a less effective, less expensive way to get humans into space and cargo into space. And NASA spent about $15 billion trying to replace the shuttle and get a more effective way to get cargo and humans into space. And NASA has completely failed to build anything in all that time because it's a government agency. It has systemic structural problems that make it impossible for the agency to do things efficiently or cheaply, or even with any innovation. Congressmen want jobs protected in districts. NASA itself can't take risks because politically it doesn't work for them. Mm-hmm. So the end result is NASA spends a fortune and doesn't get anything built. Plus, when NASA does it, you have a single program and a single option with no redundancy. What instead is working here is a very old American ideal. It's called free enterprise. Multiple companies are competing to get the business of bringing cargo and humans up to space for both NASA and other customers as well. And because multiple companies are competing, it's forcing the costs to drop. They can't do it. They have to do it cheaply. And on top of that, it's for causing innovation and redundancy. SpaceX and Dragon is one option, but we've got a whole plethora of other options that will give us variety when we bring humans up into space. And this is a good thing. Asking NASA to do it, George, has been a mistake for the last 4 decades because it hasn't really gotten us where we want to be.
Well, and Richard Hoagland agrees with you, Bob, that it's time for privatization of this. I'm not so sure I do, but we'll talk more about that later on a special show we're working on. But in this particular case, so NASA will set out bids and companies will bid on it, then they'll build it, I guess. What happens one day if some rogue company decides they're going to start doing other things with their space technology?
Well, look, for one thing, you've always got strict American laws about passing on technology, and these companies are not interested in getting in trouble with the government.
Sure, but other companies have passed on technology to the Chinese, for example.
That has happened, but in this case, they're aiming at trying to sell product. So if for example, SpaceX is not just selling to the, as they said in their broadcast the other day, NASA is a customer to them.
That's right.
They own Dragon and they own the rocket. The key to yesterday's launch wasn't so much Dragon, which is exciting, but they have proven once again that Falcon 9 is a very robust, reliable rocket. And they have several billion dollars in contracts for commercial launches that have been waiting in the wings until this launch was a success. And with this launch a success, I expect SpaceX to start launching satellites pretty regularly with Falcon 9, and they are undercutting the price for everyone. They're going to force every other launch business to either find a way to do it less expensively or go out of business.
And I assume most of these employees are former NASA employees. Is that a pretty good guess?
You know, it's a mixed bag. I would say a certain percentage of the people working for SpaceX have been at NASA, but I think a large percentage of them actually are young bloods, new people who are not poisoned by the government way of doing things. NASA has a government way which is slow and bureaucratic and requires multiple checks and doesn't allow for a lot of questioning or innovation. With a small company like this, you hire a new person who is creative and independent-minded, and they will come up with new ideas. And actually, the glitch that happened on Saturday was proof of how good Falcon 9 is and how good the company is, because their computer found a problem before launch, even if it was the last second, and they were able to fix that. If the computer hadn't found the problem, if their design hadn't included a computer to find the problem, and they had launched, they could have lost the rocket and Dragon.
That's true.
So they proved their design is good. And so this is innovative, and it's good, and it's very exciting, because in the next few years, we're going to see a robust aerospace industry populating the solar system for profit. It's a wonderful thing.
All right. Thank you, Robert. Robert's website, BehindTheBlack.com. Now, you might not know the name Eugene Pauly, do you? Think about that. Who is Eugene Pauly? Nobody really knows, do they? He was the inventor of the TV remote control clicker that we all call. He died at the age of 96. He was the inventor of the television remote control. Zenith Electronics said he passed away of natural causes in Chicago. His invention was in 1955. Gosh, that's a long time ago. It was called Flashmatic. Pointed a beam of light of photocells at each corner of a television, turning it off and on and changing the channels. This was a luxury add-on in the days way before the hundreds of cable and satellite television channels. Eugene Pauly dies at the age of 96, the inventor of the TV remote control. Now, listening to this program, you know about Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, SETI. You've heard Seth Shostak on our program many, many times. Well, after 35 years of alien hunting, the director of the SETI research, Jill Tarter, is giving up that quest, but not giving up hope. Jill's on with us right now. So you're going to call it retirement, Jill, huh?
Let's just call it a transition, actually. I'm no longer the director of the Center for SETI Research. That job is being taken on by my very able colleague, Jerry Harp, and he has many innovative ideas for how to augment the searches we've been doing. My job will be to make sure that we have stable funding so that Jerry can do that and we can keep on searching.
Which is a tough job, Jill, in these days.
It certainly is, but it's absolutely necessary. When we had to put the Allen Telescope Array into hibernation last year because our partner, UC Berkeley, had run out of funds to operate it, it was a real wake-up call for me. And we now have another partner to operate the telescope. We're using it every day, and I want to just keep that going.
Jill, talking with Seth Shostak for so many years, there's this passion, and you've been on our program before, there's this passion to find extraterrestrial intelligence out there. What keeps pushing you?
Well, it's a really phenomenally important question that humans have been asking themselves for millennia. We have some tools, and we are making those tools better every day, and we're trying to do a systematic exploration. And it's a real privilege to be able to spend a career trying to answer a question that's important to everyone on the planet, and to be able to be part of improving that search and making the instruments that we have now big enough and capable enough to take on this vast exploration.
Maybe one day, Jill, we'll find out. Thanks so much, and good luck in everything you do, your endeavors.
Thank you. Just spend money.
Okay. Up next, destiny versus choice. That's right. The scientific and spiritual evidence behind fate and free will. Marie D. Jones joins us. And this I'm looking forward to. She's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Marie D. Jones, best-selling author, host, public speaker, screenwriter, a forward-thinking individual. Marie just takes on the next level to both science and our understanding of the universe and our place in it. Extensive background in metaphysics and spiritual studies. She spent years as a field investigator for the Mutual UFO Network, based in Los Angeles and San Diego. Her new work here, Destiny versus Choice. Marie, welcome back. How are you?
I am good. It's so good to finally be back.
Free choice, huh?
Yeah.
Tell me about this. Well, first of all, what is destiny as far as you're concerned?
Oh, destiny is the idea that the events in our life have all been predetermined, possibly by us before we incarnated into this existence, or maybe by a higher power, depending on your religious beliefs. But a lot of people get destiny confused with fate.
Mm-hmm.
I hear a lot of people interchange the two. Well, fate is much more fixed. What I found is that, you know, destiny has a little bit of fluidity to it. It's not quite firm and fixed, whereas fate, that's it. You have no choice in the matter. If you are fated to do something, it will happen. If you're fated to die at a certain time, it will happen. So that's a more extreme version of destiny.
Taking a quote from Robert Frost in his stories of Two Roads Diverged in the Yellow mm-hmm. Woods, on your cover you have a pathway going two ways,
right.
The old fork there. And is it fate or destiny then if you take one pathway and something happens?
Well, if you believe that you have absolutely no choice or free will in the matter, let's set that completely aside for now. Whatever path you take would be fate. In other words, you're kind of like a robot. You're under mind control. You have no will of your own. You're just going through the motions, basically, and every path, every step you take has been preordained, if you want to put it that way. But again, destiny allows for some choice. It allows for a little more maneuvering room. So when you get to that fork in the road, you can actually choose. Hopefully, if you're aligned with your destiny, you'll choose the right path, but you don't have to. So that's the difference between, you know, coming up on your destiny or discovering what your destiny is and feeling like you're fated to do something. Fate is really depressing. I think destiny is much more empowering.
On my way home last night, I saw a car that had somehow hit something, probably another car, because we had the fire engines all over it, so I couldn't see much. But it obviously had flipped over, and somebody was obviously hurt inside.
Right.
You know, it was a blaze. In that particular case, this individual, maybe he was leaving work, maybe she was leaving a store, who knows? I don't think they thought, I'm going to get into a car crash, I'm going to die.
Exactly.
Within 10 minutes of wherever they were leaving from, let's say.
Exactly.
What is that? Is that fate?
This is where philosophers have gotten really nitpicky with this subject, and this is why the debate between destiny and choice or fate and free will has gone on for millennia and probably will continue. Now, somebody could say that, yes, it was fated for that person to be in that accident, that their soul in the last life needed for this to happen, that there's a chain of events that had to occur for their ongoing evolutionary growth, okay? Somebody else could say, you know what? It was pure damn bad luck. Wrong place, wrong time. And it just really depends on what mindset you approach it from. And the thing is that you can find, you know, throughout the book, I looked at philosophy, religion, nature, quantum physics, cosmology, divination systems. I mean, I just looked at everything, and I kept finding what I call circumstantial evidence, because it's really not proof, but just circumstantial evidence for both. And I really think it depends on the person. I think we have an inner knowing. If something happens to us, for example, if somebody gets cancer, there are two ways that they can look at that. They can look at it as, oh, my God, why me? Why am I so unlucky? Or as you may hear many people say, especially when they come out of the battle with cancer, that had to have happened. That was the best thing that ever happened. It put me on back on my path. I'm now living a more authentic life. I feel like I'm living on purpose. And really, purpose is another interchangeable word for destiny. So again, it's all about the mindset of the person, because you will find some evidence for both, that, yeah, that car crash had to happen. It was all preordained, all predetermined.
Yeah.
And no, it was just pure, crappy, bad timing.
If you looked in the great book would have said that that individual was dying on that day, I think, wouldn't it?
Right, right, exactly. And, you know, that makes us feel a little bit like, God, do we have any control at, you know, over our lives at all? Are we just sort of wind-up toys? But, you know, every religious text talks about the balance between the two, whether we're talking about Christianity or Judaism or Islam or the Eastern traditions, they all talk about both being at play, that we have destiny, we have things that are predetermined in our lives, but we also have choice. And, you know, a lot of the morality of humankind is based upon the choices that we make, whether they're aligned with our destiny. And usually you hear about destiny in terms of the higher evolution of the soul, sort of in an ongoing, you know, through one incarnation to the next, your soul is always trying to grow. So if you align yourself with your destiny in each life, you're going to get a little higher the next time and a little higher the next time. But, you know, again, it's just, this is such a confusing argument and debate for so many people because everybody has their own personal feeling. I've talked to people that said, I have no sense of destiny.
Does probability, Marie, fit into this? Let me give you an example, because you have a dice,
right,
or a die, as we'd call it, because it's only one, on your cover. So to me, probability would say, over a course of a 1,000 rolls, 1/6 of those rolls will come up one.
Exactly.
Then two, then three, four, five, until you have, of course, 6 out of 6. That kind of percent. What is that? Is that destiny? Is that probability? Or does that not even fit into this?
And that, you know, that falls more into the idea of chance. What is chance? Chance is a crapshoot, right?
Right.
Where does that fit in? And yet at the same time, if you think about it, there is that idea of choice, you know, how you choose to throw the dice, how the dice choose to come up. But at the same time, you're very limited. There is a little bit of determinism present there because you're limited by what is on the dice. You're going to get something that's on that dice.
Well, and the more you roll, the more you're going to get them all eventually.
Exactly, exactly. And chance is one of those things that I found, especially with philosophers, that they couldn't quite categorize either way. It's kind of like they left that one off to the side. You know, it was not an easy thing to look at, well, do things happen by pure chance? How do we fit that into the picture? But I do see, again, a little bit of both at play there, because you're dealing with dice that you only have a certain amount of options. So there is going to be some kind of predeterminism at play with what the outcome is, but at the same time, there's choices, you know, depending on how you roll the dice. It's like you're dealt a hand of cards, but you can play that hand of cards differently each time.
What does science say about this?
This was one of the most fascinating things for me because I love science, and you know, my dad was a scientist, and I always seem to like to look at things from a scientific point of view. Where this got real interesting is that if you look at life on a grander scale, let's say the cosmic, the universal scale, we have forces and laws of motion and gravity and thermodynamics that are at play that we have no choice over. These are laws by which our universe operates. And, you know, that kind of speaks to a little bit of a predetermined set or foundation or structure that we exist within. That's the reality that we exist within. When I looked at the quantum, you know, the exact opposite, we're going now down to the particulate, the subatomic level. As we were talking about before, there's probability, there's potentiality, there's the idea that the observer can affect the outcome of the behavior of a particle. And it seemed like on that level, we have some choice. We have some control over what happens at the quantum level.
Marie, stay with us. Coming back, we're going to talk more about destiny versus choice right here on Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, we'll take your phone calls with Marie Jones and also your stories of free will versus destiny, fate versus free will, and get your views on all of that. I'm looking forward to that. This is a special two-hour split program. Later on tonight, we're going to talk about the power of healing. By the way, we had our Coast Insiders video chat tonight. I had a lot of fun doing that. We had, a lot of people that popped in. And also in June, on our next video chat, I think we're going to install a Skype line where you'll be able to call me. See, what I'm doing right now is I'm feeding video to you. So you're at your computer and you see me in my office going, oh my God, look at him. And we do it like that. And then Lex sends me via computer your questions and I read them. I read them on the air. You know, Betty from Wichita wants to know this. And then I answer it. And we do that. The video chats are 30 minutes. The type chats that we do when I'm in St. Louis are 1 hour. So that's what we've been doing. I'm going to push this up a little bit, and we're going to do Skype audio with you, which means I'll be able to watch the screen, watch your Skype calls come in. Coast Insiders, you'll have a special phone number to call, okay? It won't be the one that we use on the air. And I'll be able to get you up. Your audio will be fed directly to everybody that's watching the video, okay? So if, like, Will calls me, Will is filling in for Tom tonight, you'll hear Will's voice on the air, you know, asking his question. I'll answer it, and then we'll go on to the next one. So we're going to do that rather than just do it by Lex sending me messages all the time. So anyway, we'll come back in a moment. Marie D. Jones with us. We're talking about her work, Destiny versus Choice. That's next. Back with Marie Jones as we talk about destiny versus choice. How did you get involved in this, Marie?
I was, well, two reasons. One, my publisher said, okay, what do you want to write about next? Which is always like, you know, the worst thing you want to hear. But I was going through a period in my life where I was not necessarily questioning my destiny, because I've always known. I'm one of those rare, and from what I understand, very lucky people that knew from the time I tumbled out of the womb that I was going to be a writer. But I was starting to have a lot of questions about the messages that I wanted to put out, what I wanted to write about. And the subject was just on my mind. Well, funnily enough, I started getting emails from people just out of the blue. Of course, we know there's no such thing. Asking me if I was ever going to write about this subject matter, and I thought, okay, this is just way too synchronistic to ignore. And so I told my publisher, this is what I want to do. It's very personal to me because I've always had a sense of destiny, and I have a lot of people that I've talked to over the years that feel very frustrated that they're not like me, and I think that everybody has that sense of destiny. They just don't recognize it. So it was kind of important for me to do this at this time. I think a lot of people are really searching right now for authenticity. You know, so many people are going through, whether it's economic or health tragedies and problems, and everything is so chaotic. And that tends to be when people start to really look inward and want to live more authentically. So I thought, you know what, the timing is really right for this.
You know, I could say that, you know, this job was my destiny. This was what I wanted to do, and doggone it, this is what happened. It was written in the stars before I was born.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could say fate jumped in and did a lot of different little things along the line, from my first out-of-body experience at 11, my interest in UFOs and aliens, my interest in alternative medicine. One could say fate did that to you, George. So what is it?
Well, and you could also say that you made all those choices of your own volition and free will.
True.
Based upon, and this is another argument that I've gotten into with people, because a lot of people who are atheists say, I can't believe in destiny because I don't
believe in God.
Believe. And in order to believe in destiny, you kind of have to believe in God, or first cause, as I call it in the book, or the idea that I've been incarnated before, that I'm going to live again. I say, you know what? You don't. You don't. Destiny is such a broad concept that it can mean nothing more than finding your purpose. And finding your purpose can be something that you may know from childhood, as I did, or you may figure out when you're 40. But, you know, irregardless of when you figure it out, because if you don't, you're not going to lead an authentic life. You're going to die with a lot of regrets. So take the religious element out of it. However, at the same time, and George, I'm sure you probably felt this, did you not feel that you were being sort of pushed along a certain trajectory by something?
Well, contrary to what, God love him, my deceased father, mm-hmm. who wanted me to be a dentist.
Right.
And he kept pushing me in that direction, and I appeased him for a couple of years in college.
Probably were miserable, weren't you?
Well, I wasn't miserable. I mean, I loved science, but it wasn't what I wanted to do.
Exactly.
And, you know, so I changed it, and I went into that direction. So I think with destiny, fate, and free will, I think there's that possibility that all three could be mixed in.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And everything that I looked at, it was like a tennis match. You know, I'd be looking over here first. Okay, there's some evidence of some kind of predeterminism here. And then, oh, wait. But over here, it looks like there's choice, there's free will, there's volition. And it really was like a tennis match, no matter what subject, whether I was talking about evolution or DNA or nature versus nurture, human behavior, you know, astrology, palm reading, they were all present. And I really, you know, ultimately the conclusion that I came to was that these are all at play in our lives. But, you know, a book is no good unless it makes your life better in some way.
That's right.
And what I really wanted to emphasize, and I still do whenever I talk about this subject, is this is meaningless unless you somehow apply it to your own life. I am so tired of talking to people who are miserable. And when you get right down to it, the reason why they're miserable and unhappy is because they're not living the life that they wanted to live. They're living their parents' life or their spouse's idea of a life for them or society's or whatever. They don't even know what they want. So the idea behind finding your destiny, don't make it so scary. It's just, you know, why are you here? You know, what do you feel? What have you always felt compelled to do? And then take it from there.
Marie, what about the law of attraction? How does that fit into this?
Interestingly, this gets a little tricky because we're, you know, in the law of attraction teachings, we're told that we can create our reality as we go along. We can set intention, and that it's focused thought, focused intention. What we put our attention on is what will manifest in our physical reality. So people will hear that and they'll say, okay, well, then it's all choice. Okay, it's all my intention, it's all choice. Now, that seems to be the case. Law of attraction, which we know to be ancient teachings, certainly not new, despite what a lot of people think, it is about choice. It is about where you put your attention and where you put the power of your focused thought. But here's the other side of the equation. Here's where a sense of predeterminism might come into play. You can only manifest so much. Now, I can use the law of attraction to manifest a spouse, you know, the perfect mate, a great job.
Sure.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
But I can't use the law of attraction to turn myself into a llama, no matter what I do. There are, you know,
But you can go out and buy a llama coat.
I can go out and buy one. Right.
And then you get spray painted.
Yeah. But, you know, there are certain, and we're living in a certain infrastructure that has some rules. And no matter how badly I want to fly, if I jump off my coffee table, I'm going to hit the ground unless I, you know, build myself some wings. I can fly in a plane, but I can't manifest myself into a bird. So the law of attraction does, again, give us a lot of choice, but it does so within a certain infrastructure that is already built in.
If a couple meets this law of attraction and, you know, one person happens to be there and the other person happens to show up and they click, they get along, they get married, and all that. That is attraction. I think there's some kind of magnetism in the universe.
Oh, I do.
That
too.
Draws people together, draws events together.
Right.
And it happens. I've told my kids, right, I've said, look, let the cosmos do what it needs to do for you.
Right. Right.
Be ready. Don't push. I mean, I have a daughter who just got a great job.
Mm-hmm.
But prior to that, she'd go on an interview and go, should I call him back right away and tell him, you know?
And I said, no.
If they want you, they'll call you.
Exactly.
You know what? Leave the interview with, thank you very much. I'm very interested. I look forward to hearing from you.
Right. And then detach.
And then let it happen, okay? Just let the universe do what it's going to do and don't force it.
Exactly.
Don't push it. The more people push, I think the more it repels, don't you?
I absolutely do. And I also think that if you are aligned with, I like to say that destiny is the trajectory of a life. Now, if you're aligned with that, as you say, you go into a situation, you do your best, and then you detach from the outside.
That's right. I mean, go on the interview. Make them aware right. that you exist.
Do your very best.
And then just let it happen.
Let it go. Let go, let God. I mean, there's so many different, you know, surrender, what are all the different sayings that people have. So basically, if you're feeling good about it and you did your best, you've aligned yourself with your purpose. If you're just so tightened and clutching at yourself, oh my God, oh, you know, and stressing out, you're not aligned. So that's a good way. I love the teachings of Abraham, the law of attraction teachings, where basically it comes down to, do you feel good? Okay, if you feel good, you're on the right path.
That's right.
When you start feeling crappy, you know there's something off and you need to adjust the trajectory, get back on the path. And that can be a very simple way for people to get the concept of destiny. Destiny doesn't have to be this big, giant, grand, oh my God, I have to be a rock star or, you know, president of the United States. Destiny can be just being the best mom that you can be.
What do you think is in the cosmos that makes this happen?
Oh, we're getting into such good, juicy, metaphysical stuff here. If you believe in destiny and the idea that there are things, you know, synchronicities, there are things that happen on a hidden, implicate order that we don't see. We just see the effects of them. The cause, I kept hearing this phrase called first cause, and basically you can equate that with God, if you will, or higher intelligence, intelligent design even. You know, I hesitate to say that because people will associate certain religious implications with that. But there, the cosmos seems to have a consciousness. It seems to know, despite all the forces and laws that we have no control over, there does seem to be a conscious element to it that we are linked up with. And, you know, people that are into astrology will tell you that everything that happens in the cosmos, as above, so below, it affects us on the Earth-based scale just as much as what's happening cosmically. So I really feel like when we're aligned again, I love that word, when we're aligned with what the universal consciousness wants for us, we're going to reach our destiny. When we're misaligned, I love the word disaster, meaning torn apart from the stars. When we're misaligned with what is happening on that level, then down here on Earth, we live a crappy existence. We're unhappy. We don't know why. We can't put our finger on it. Something just doesn't seem right. So again, I think it really is all about aligning with what feels good, you know, what feels like it's moving you forward on that path and not blocking you at every turn.
We are in a situation now, Marie, where people are uptight about everything.
Okay.
About everything. I mean, and we're being bombarded with everything.
Yes, absolutely.
More than I can imagine. I don't know if we can blame the internet for this feeling of bombardment or not.
Oh, I think you can.
but things are happening. I mean, there's no question about it.
And they go viral, and then everybody gets infected, you know, by it. Absolutely.
So how do people use this free choice fate, in order to make their life a little bit better?
You know, when we're in such chaotic times, people tend to escape, which is why movies do so well. But I think what's really happening, because I'm hearing this from a lot of people, people are being backed into corners. They're losing their jobs. They're losing their income. You know, marriages are breaking up, and all these negative, awful things are happening. And yet, many of these people find positive in that. They may say, you know, my marriage broke up, but really it was not a good marriage to begin with. Or I lost my job, but you know what? I hated that job. And now I'm starting my own business because I've got nothing to lose. You know, so you'll hear these wonderful stories that come out of this chaos and misery. So you have two choices. If these things are happening and life is chaotic, you can choose to just sort of give in and lay down and die. Or use this as a time to find your destiny. Live authentically. If you have always wanted to do something, but you didn't because your parents didn't want you to do it, and you know they're both been long dead, why are you waiting? If you hated your job for the last 20 years and it's given you a heart attack now and you almost died, isn't that a good sign that maybe it's time to live your life and nobody else's?
But in a perfect world, that would be great. But what if they can't get a different job? What if they're trapped in a different house? You know, I tell some of these guests that I have on the air who say, be self-sufficient, live off the land, move somewhere.
Right.
Not everybody can do that. Nobody can do that, hardly. I mean, how many people who live in some city or live in suburbia, they have a job, can just pick up and leave?
Exactly.
Not a lot of folks.
You know, you can find a way, though, to, let's say your destiny, and destiny, again, can be about something like, for example, I could say my destiny was to be a writer, but maybe that's not necessarily true. Maybe my destiny was to express myself using the written word. So somebody who is stuck in a job or that they can't get out of, what have you, they can't move from a place that they hate, you can still find in that things to be happy about. You can find ways to express yourself authentically, whether through a hobby, your spare time, volunteering. I think there's always a way. And I always say focus on the stories of people that did it. You know, there are so many stories out there of people that had nothing, they lost everything, and they found a way to do it. Well, what is the difference between them and you? And if you can, you know, focus on that instead of, oh my God, I could never do that. I've always had bad luck. It's never going to happen to me. You know, you might start seeing some open doors coming up somewhere if you're focusing on the open doors instead of all the ones that have closed off on you. So, I mean, I live in the suburbs. I'm a single mom. I can't really up and move to the country. And I mean, I guess
no,
I could,
and you know what? You know? Look, I got to tell you, I know one day Southern California is going to get hit with a big earthquake.
I am overtrained for that earthquake.
It's going to happen.
Oh, absolutely.
But people can't just move away.
Absolutely.
I know that, you know, there have been tsunamis that have occurred. They're going to happen. You just can't move
away. Tornadoes, people that live in the central part of the country. I still think that living authentically, you know, Viktor Frankl, oh, gosh, what was the name of the book? I wish I could remember now. I just drew a blank.
Well, we'll get it.
He was in the Holocaust. He was
good staff.
Right. Talked about how even in the horrific conditions of being in a Nazi death camp, he was able to find purpose and beauty. And
man's search for meaning.
There you go. Thank you.
Thank you,
now,
staff.
Come on. Oh, my God, if he could do it. If Helen
See, I've got this little earpiece, by the way, Marty.
Yeah. Know?
And they can talk. They can say anything. Right into my ear. You can never hear what they're saying. Right now,
so
Will is ordering. Right now, he's saying he's hungry for a peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
Oh, my God.
In my ear while I'm doing this show.
Jelly.
So nobody really knows that. But that's the name of that book, Man's Search for Meaning. And it was written in 1946.
Yeah, and that's a perfect example of somebody who, oh, my God, was in hell and still found a way to achieve their purpose, their destiny.
Well, Marie, you stay with us. We're going to come back. Final hour to go with you. We're going to take phone calls. Marie Jones, her websites, they're all linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. And we're talking about her work right now, Destiny versus Choice. I'm George Norrie. Back with your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM.